Good afternoon from the City AM newsroom. This is the City View podcast. I'm editor Andy Sylvester. Well, if Monday saw markets shrugging off uncertainty around the Omicron variant, Tuesday has seen it come straight back. The trigger was an interview with the CEO of Moderna, who warned that existing vaccines might not work as well against this new variant than it had against previous iterations of our old friend COVID-19. The FTSE has been the red much of today, and as of recording, is down about 0.7%. The Moderna chief's opinion does, to be fair, fly in the face of other predictions, not least from the White House, where President Joe Biden said late last night that the variant was a cause for concern, sure, but not necessarily for panic. I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens on this rollercoaster ride. EasyJet, they're already feeling the hit. The airline told markets this morning that bookings had already been hit by the return of travel restrictions as the emergence of the variant threatened to upset the industry's fragile recovery. The firm recorded a loss of $1.1 billion for the year to September, but bosses were keen to stress that the original low-cost disruptor still has access to around $4.4 billion in cash. And TSB are set to close around 70 branches by the end of June, nearly a quarter of its remaining network, in another blow to high street banking. The Sabadell-owned bank closed around 160 branches last year, and this further move will leave it with around 220 sites. There was also news from the competition watchdog today, which Leah Montebello, our TMT correspondent, is here to discuss. Leah, thanks for joining. Facebook and Giphy, competition watchdog, not very happy.
No, so the CMA, which is the UK's competition watchdog, as you said, they have basically directed Facebook that they need to sell Giphy. So Facebook bought Giphy last year for about $400 million. They've kind of been under the scrutiny of the UK watchdog, who basically have said that they have too much of a significant market share for social media. Mm-hmm. So this means digital ads, so they have too much dominance there, and also potentially directing users away from their social media competitors. Mm-hmm. So they've ordered all of them to sell it.
And for those unfamiliar, Giphy is the home of very short, sometimes amusing videos by the name of GIFs, not GIFs, as I found out all too recently. I guess a weird question, Leah, but why does the UK regulator have a say in this? Because Facebook's headquartered in Silicon Valley. Giphy, you know, were already in the States. Mm-hmm. So why does the regulator here have a say? And why does it have the power to say, you know, you need to sell Giphy?
It's all about kind of market share. So Facebook currently control about half of the 7 billion display ad market in the UK. So they have a huge amount of influence. And I think it just goes in the general background of UK or the UK government cracking down on big tech. So the CMA actually fined Facebook last month, 50 million for not complying with giving information to them. So it's kind of comes in this large kind of narrative.
If Facebook have a sort of head of competition authority, public affairs, they might want to get another one at the moment, I think. What are Facebook's next steps? Because it is a decent sized transaction. It is just an interesting example of big tech having to deal with regulators.
So they've already said this morning they're planning to appeal the decision, which I guess is no surprise considering their previous behaviour.
Mm. Yeah, well, we will wait and see what that appeal does. Of course, the UK courts no doubt will get involved. But it is one of those cases that does go to show that regulators are cracking down. Earlier this week, of course, in Europe, we saw Margaret Vestager say that it was a better option to get 80% of the regulation you wanted now on social media giants versus 100% at some point in the undefined future. Leah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And now we're going to move on to today's special guest, Jamie Milroy, who is the founder and CEO of Dash Rides. They provide e-bikes on a rental scheme to companies right across the city and across London, and are hoping to revolutionise micro-mobility. Jamie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't we kick off with, just for those unfamiliar with the idea, because I think we'll get sort of cycle to work and all that jazz, but talk us through what makes Dash different.
Yeah, sure. So we are a subscription e-bike company. So it's the idea of paying a monthly fee to use a bike, but not to own it. So you pay a fraction of the cost that you otherwise would, but you also get lots of other sort of perks and add-ons, be it you get your helmet, a lock, insurance that covers you, the rider, the bike itself, and anyone or anything you may crash into. Hopefully that's not the case, but there if you need it. Anything goes wrong with the bike, we'll come to you and fix it. If we can't fix it, you get a new one. And then lastly, but not leastly, we carbon offset all of our bikes by 400%, which is really our part in just reciprocating your positive action in getting on a bike in the first place.
Yeah, that makes sense. Where did the idea for this come from? Because you are now very much an entrepreneur, a pandemic entrepreneur, but before that you were at PwC, if I'm not wrong.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, so I was at PwC, I spent a good 8 years there. The idea came from the realization that I was at a stage where I was managing multiple jobs all across the city, all at one, you know, at one time. And I was spending a huge amount of my money, the firm's money, my client's money on tubes, taxis, buses, not to mention lost time, and also just not very good use of CO2, carbon dioxide. So, you know, quite polluting activities, particulate matter, two big problems that the world's sort of grappling with. And therefore, there must be a better way of doing this. And that's sort of the core thesis of where Dash started. We sort of initial versions of the idea were e-scooters, working with corporates to, you know, help them move their people across the city on e-scooters. Legislation didn't really allow us to do that and still doesn't. So we then moved to e-bikes. And then the pandemic came around, and that sort of caused us to relook at our business again and come up with what we are now.
Yeah, which makes sense, all right, because the pandemic forced everybody to start thinking about how they moved around, probably thinking about it more than they ever had before, or perhaps even ever wanted to. I mean, I see what you mean about an e-bike and turning up at meetings. And is the idea that they're electric bikes? Because, you know, frankly, if you did a bike rental, everybody would turn up sweaty. But e-bikes are sort of, you know, you can arrive feeling suitably fresh. How, as you're coming out of the pandemic and you're thinking about the future of cities, how has the reaction been from the companies that you've spoken to?
So hugely positive, I would say. So our platform costs employers nothing, is the first place to start with. But actually, the vast majority of our employers that we work with are contributing to the scheme. So they're incredibly supportive, incredibly enthusiastic about what the impact that we can make to their people, their communities, and the planet. And I think as we come out of the pandemic, or you know, potentially going back into some form of lockdown as we're speaking today, it doesn't seem that sort of distant a thought. COP26, obviously having happened fairly recently, I think there is a real need for what we do. And I think most businesses are pretty keen to engage with us and have a conversation about what we can do and how we're different. And that tends to get them quite excited, to be honest.
And is that about their green credentials, so to speak, their E and the ESG, or is it about recognizing that companies are going to have to go probably a little bit above and beyond expectations, pre-pandemic expectations, in terms of how they offer their employees, you know, perks, for want of a better phrase?
Yeah, no, you're spot on. I actually think it's a combination of all of them. So, you know, businesses have got some pretty unique and severe challenges at the moment. So health and well-being of their employees is obviously one. How they get down to net zero over, you know, the coming decades, obviously another big one. And then you've got the pandemic and how people move around. And again, that's obviously being the Omicron variant coming, you know, being released into London, it sounds like. So there's this quite unique set of challenges. And I think we're nicely positioned to cover all of them and make an impact across all of them. So it's quite an efficient action for employers to take.
You talked about legislation around e-scooters and how that has not necessarily moved that quickly. We've also got trials, but nothing really that is dramatic.
Yeah.
In terms of liberalizing those. When it comes to cycling infrastructure around the city, there have been changes, right? Over the pandemic, there were various cycle lanes that just sort of appeared in some ways out of nowhere, and wider pavements and all that sort of things. You know, as we transition, let's say out of Omicron, let's look 2-3 years down the line, because apparently looking 2 weeks down the line these days is apparently enough to get you in trouble. Do you see cities like London having a real competitive advantage if they adopt, you know, these greener, quicker modes of transport?
Do you know, that's a really good question. I think off the top of my head, absolutely. If you look at the younger cohorts of the working population and what they're really passionate about and interested in, sustainability is right at the top. So if London's going to retain its sort of competitive edge for attracting and keeping talent, absolutely the city needs to be doing things to appeal to their persuasions and their interests. So, you know, enabling people to live a really healthy, sustainable life by providing safe, you know, separated cycle lanes, I think is enormously important for the city. And actually they'll reap the benefits for doing so. So hopefully they should pay for themselves over the long run.
Yeah, and I think we'd all agree that the less time spent on the Northern Line, the more you want, or the more you want to stay. Yeah, indeed, the more you want to stay in London. So, Jamie, we'll leave it there for now. It's really interesting to kind of see this business coming out of the pandemic and starting to think about the future. So thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me, Andy.
And that's all from us today at the City View podcast. I've been Andy Sylvester. We will again be back tomorrow. Who knows whether markets will be up or down in this rollercoaster week. See you soon.